plan to have a press conference this afternoon. I haven't had one in some time. I gather the boy's getting a little restless.
Well, I think
I'm going to do that before I hit the House committee tomorrow morning.
I think that's good. I didn't think we fared too well over the weekend with Stennis and Russell. I thought Russell's was particularly bad. The 12 billion figure, and that they would, if they could have a election in Ho Chi Minh, they'd vote for Ho Chi Minh.
That was bad because it just isn't so. By the way, if I get a question on this Mike Mansfield thing today, do you have a particular thought of what I should say? Perhaps I should just say, well, I was surprised to see the newspaper story because I was present most of the consultations. I didn't hear any effort made to dissuade you about on the point of filling up the reserves.
I think that's right. What I would say is that you don't indulge in personalities. You don't know anything about the personality problem, but you do know that in the Security Council discussions where war plans are involved, that we had asked that there be no discussion of it, and that you've seen a good deal in the press, but that you did not see anything in the meetings that would justify the statements that the president had changed his opinion because of anything. Do you think that's a mistake?
Right. Right.
Without hitting it forward or anything else. I did not. They played it up a good deal more than was. What they said to me yesterday was, these stories have been running and running and running. We think we're entitled to the facts. Is it true that Senator Mansfield made a speech which you changed your mind about calling up the reserve because you were fearful of the congressional attitude? And I said, well, you're entitled to an honest answer. There have been stories appear to that effect. That is not true. What Senator Mansfield said was in writing. I have read it over carefully since he said it. And his statement reflects no change in opinion on his part, and it did not bring about any on my part, and it did not mention reserves. And I would say that whoever discussed it, and I don't go into name calling, whoever discussed it broke my confidence because I asked them not to. Asked them if they had to leave the room, not participate. And they had a backgrounder on it up there. Laird and Ford had a big backgrounder and called them all in and told them everything had happened. I would say, though, that if, just as you outlined it, I think it's pretty good, and if we're going to continue to counsel on war plans, we just have to have, we can't advertise them. On the Pakistan thing, have we made some recent commitment to India that IHOOP's talking about, that that along the line of the consortium that we asked be postponed as far as Pakistan?
We went to a consortium meeting in June, I believe, on India, and made a very tentative commitment there and subject to congressional action. But the reaction was grumpy up in the Congress, and that had undoubtedly had a good deal to do with the attitude about whether we should do that for Pakistan. But it was a very tentative matter, and we've simply rolled the punch on that as far as the Pakistan is concerned, because it was the end of a five-year plan for India, but this is the beginning of a new five-year plan for Pakistan, and the two kinds of commitments are quite different in character. But we did go to a consortium in June, I think you were aware of it at the time. I don't think you were particularly happy about it, but we did go to one in June.
Well, I thought we were just continuing what we had agreed to.
Well, this was
just the one Tom Mann and I had such a row about.
That's right. This was the final year of a five-year plan in India. Now the problem in Pakistan is embarking upon a new five-year plan.
I know it, but did the one that Tom Mann go to involve a new commitment? I thought his explanation to me was that we had tentatively agreed to go along with it, and we broke off relationship
right.
with him.
Well, that is correct in the sense that we had indicated to the Indians earlier that we would expect to make a pledge of X amount in connection with a 5-year program, and so
think somebody ought to tell Paxton. And Comer's written me a memo that says we think they ought to use direct and indirect means every way we can to do the following with the Pakistanians before they get so hard and we get so hard that we just will not talk. Number one, that we ought to say to them that are willing to talk and ready to talk as soon as the Congress acts, and that I'm not going to make any pledges to any country. And I've told them that we hadn't already orally or tentatively committed until the Congress acts, but as soon as we do, we'd be willing to. Number two, we're not trying to be their masters of in their relations with China any more than we expect them to be our masters in relations to India. That the best way to handle these things, not in the newspapers, but by visit, and that we have a standing invitation to come as soon as the Congress acts, and we would like to see him go through with that. And if he doesn't, then we just have to be very careful that we don't lose our face and we don't we go as far with him as we can now, off the record, directly and indirectly, to try to get him in a better frame of mind. If we don't, well, then we just have to play it pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so if you don't mind and you agree with that, I would take whatever steps I could to say, now, we don't want you to get to trying these things in radio speeches. We're not trying them. We're asking because of internal problems of our own not to act on this, not have Mr. Hassan and the rest of them using it as head, but you better sober up a little.
Well, I told the Pakistan ambassador last time I saw him that this kind of public speech that you made the time before, and these demonstrations and things were a direct interference in our own internal problems here, and that foreign aid is not something that's in the state of nature. That we don't have a mountain of gold around the Rockies to pay for it. We have to call on taxi drivers and school teachers and corporations and everybody else to come up with taxes to make it possible. And we have some problems here in this country, and that therefore Pakistan has got to help with those problems. And I ask him then to bring in the full text to President Ayub's speech for another talk, and he's been playing, he's been hiding in the corner because I think he doesn't want to talk about that speech because it was a rather bad speech. But I'll be seeing him again this week, and I'll go over this.
Well, he made another one yesterday, I gather.
Yes, I gather he did.
Well, now, he also advocates, that the Comer does, that we stop construction on that facility out there. Just like we don't have to have it, he thinks that they think that we got to, and that that's going to... So would you mind taking a look at that?
Yes, I will.
I sent the memo back and told him I agreed with it, that I thought that we ought to take every means we could, direct and indirect. One, to tell him quit trying this in the newspapers and speeches. Two, to stop the construction if that was the judgment of the government. Three, to tell them that they were welcome and we were ready to talk to them as soon as the Congress had acted. Fourth, that we had not played indifferent policy with them that we had with any other government, that where we had tentative commitments before, well, we had not canceled them, and we were not canceling his for this year. But we were not making any new ones, and I'd asked Bell just not to make them to anyone.
All right.
And
I had a good talk with Arthur Goldberg this morning. And
well, I played him up a little bit to try to get the peace thing in it over the weekend. We didn't have anything constructive or anything to talk about, but I thought it'd be good for the visit and his pride and pictures and so forth.
Here, tomorrow I'm going to see about one or two of his personnel matters he wants to talk about, and might go with you a little bit.
All right.
Otherwise, things are reasonably quiet here. We'll be getting Abel Hammond back this week and getting Max Taylor back, so we'll probably have some pressure on both those returns.
But why don't we have some test, some gauge of sentiment? Bill Moyer told me Gallup and Quayle both wanted to get some Vietnamese people to just kind of go around and take a little swab on sentiment, and everybody thinks it runs 3-4 to 1 in our favor. Why don't we do that to answer the Russells? Why don't you get a study made of the elections they've already held and where they were held and how many? And I think you're going to get that question, and I would keep it low-key and off the record as I could, but I just say you don't know what sources they have.
Right.
But our sources, we've been very careful to watch it, and in light of the fact that they've had 15,000 killed this year, whatever number it is, in light of the fact that they have more of them enlisted now than were before, and we've got 10,000 a month for a while back here, in view of the fact that they're still fighting strong, none of our people, including General Taylor and Alex Johnson and General Westmoreland, and give about 8 good names, who are on the ground, who know the facts, and you have also checked with Ambassador Lodge, and that none of them feel that there's anything like that. That, of course, you could always have those things happen, but we don't believe that that's in the cards, and we don't want to encourage them to think so anyway.
Right.
And another thing you might get on the Lodge thing, in view of all the problems that he had out there before, why we send him back, well, I would think that he had about as good a relationship with the various groups, particularly the largest group in the country, as anybody we've ever had.
Right.
And that you don't know where they got that information. That's what Russell said. You see that?
Yes.
I take that Russell broadcast and read it pretty carefully, because he's very respected. And I think that somebody ought to reason this out with him, because if he gets off on this tack, he can hurt us bad.
Right. All right.
I don't know whether you're the one to talk to him or whether one of your assistants or somebody else, but he has more influence with Fulbright than anybody up there, and really more in the Senate than any other man when he uses it. And I think he could just murder us on this bill if he decided to, and I tried to clear him up on two things. One, that Ho Chi Minh wouldn't get win the election. And two, that Lodge, we're very fortunate to get him because he did get along with the booty spine and so on and so forth, and we hated like hell to lose him. And the very thing he's talking about that we haven't emphasized enough political, I just say we've done it 15 times, and we don't know how much olive branch you've got to have that you come from Georgia. You think after you say sir to a man about 4 times and he keeps hitting you in the nose that you've got to show a little firmness. And that you've had plenty of political efforts. There are 3 points there. The political effort, Ho Chi Minh winning an election, and Lodge being a poor man that he needs a little information on before he goes out in these defense hearings with Bob McNamara Thursday.
Right, well, I'll see if I can get hold of him.